But we are on Vav Amud Aleph at the bottom. Well, towards the bottom anyway. About 10 lines up from the bottom, 10 to a dozen lines up. We spent a lot of time talking about the egg that's laid on Yom Tov, and that we've now dealt with. We had the Machlokas, Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, four different explanations for why Beis Hillel takes the stance that they take, that you're not allowed to benefit from it and use it. Then we had the discussion about the first day to the second day, and we distinguished between the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah versus the 2 days of any other Yom Tov. We talked about one Kedusha, two Kedushos. We had various nuances within there. Could I use wood? What if the first day was Shabbos and the second day is Yom Tov? Maybe there are rules that change. All of this and all the ins and outs are now complete. And Itmar, we learn, Efroach Shanolad B'Yom Tov, if an egg hatches on Yom Tov, so the chick comes out of the egg on Yom Tov, so the egg was laid before Yom Tov, but nothing had come out. And then the chick comes out on Yom Tov. So Rav Amar Asur. Rav says, you can't use the chick on Yom Tov. Shmuel, Litem Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mutter. Shmuel or Rabbi Yochanan, say Mutter. What's this machlokas about? Rav Amar Asur, because Muktzo. He says it's Asur because, fundamentally, the chick is Muktzo, right? Why is it Muktzo? Because when Yom Tov started, it had no function. You weren't going to eat it inside of the egg. You couldn't shaft it inside of the egg. So what are you going to do? Therefore, the chick was muktzah. Whereas Ushmuel v'temer b'yochanan amar mutter. Why? Ha'el umatir atzmo l'shchita. Shmuel or Rabbi Yochanan say no. It's mutter because it permits itself for shchita. Now this is hard to understand, both in terms of what the line means, and second, in terms of the whole muktzah discussion. When you say it permits itself to shechita, let's take that first, in order just to understand what we're talking about. So, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, Ho'il umatir atzma, it's the fourth of the wide lines, bilei daso, liyos nishchat, when it is born, it permits itself for shechita, meaning you couldn't shecht it when it was inside the egg. The egg hatches, yeah, you can shecht the chick. It wasn't true before the thing was born, before it hatched. So too, it permitted its muktza status as well. He says, since it became prepared for this, it became prepared for that. And what that means is, what he's saying is, something that's very hard to comprehend. But essentially, this egg, this chick, I should say, was off limits for two reasons. Number one, it was muktzah. And number two, it wasn't shechtable. Comes out of the egg. Now it is shechtable. Tosfos will note that it actually has to be demonstrably complete. Because otherwise our assumption is you can't shecht the chick right out of the egg. You have to wait for it to demonstrate that it is not a nafel, so to speak, that it's viable. But let's assume that it has demonstrated viability. So, the position of Rashi is that just as the chick that comes out of the egg is now shechtable, so the non-shechtability ends, so too the muktzah status ends, together with that. And that's all Rashi tells you. He doesn't give you any further explanation, and this is very hard to understand. What does that mean? Because it's shechtable now, where did that come from? So the Pei Yoshua offers an explanation. If you take a look on your sheet at source Gimel, I'm skipping Aleph and Beis for the moment. The Pei Yoshua offers an explanation. He says, Pirish Rashi, Ho'olumati Rasmo, right? Leos Nishtap Bele Daso, Mashal Hoyalif Nele Daso, Af Muktzah Hitir, the Migo de Iske Lahavachule, Akal Lashonim. The top line of Pei Yoshua is just a quote of Rashi. So he says, Milsa de Akshoy Bakama Idonin. He says, I've been bothered by this for many seasons. Kama Idonin, Idon is the term we see in Daniel. It's an Aramaic term. It means a season or a year. What it means, I've been bothered by this for ages.
We have in Brishmen,
B'chol Idon V'Idon, correct. Dimanasinas Tam, who said, he says, what kind of an explanation is that? other Rabbi says, I can argue the opposite. Iker inyan muktzahu kevin shalo haya roi ma'esmal. The whole point of saying it's muktzah is it wasn't eligible for use yesterday. Zegari ma'esr. That's what caused it to be usr. Uma migohu zeh. So what's your migo of? Well, now it became shechtable, therefore now it becomes okay. That defeats the whole concept of muktzah. Velule lashon Rashi zal. So the Pnei Yeshua says, if not for the fact that Rashi said that, haya nearly, it would appear to me to explain this differently. Mishum debalav hachi kasha kushyas tosvos. Because even without this, we have a separate question within Tosvos, and that's why I put the Pnei Yeshua after Aleph and Beis, because I was kind of hoping that, you need to do Tosvos in order to understand this. So I'm going to pause here in the Pnei Yeshua and go back to that Tosfos, because you really can't go without seeing it. So let me explain what he's referring to here. We have a separate problem. In our Gemara, it sounds like Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan adopt the idea that the chick is muktzah. Right? Rav said the chick is usher because it's muktzah. And Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan say, yeah, but that's okay because it becomes shechtable, now it's no longer muktzah, as we understood him in the Gemara. Right? That's what it sounds like. Hello? Right. Rav said, muktzah. Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan said, yes, but it's shechtable now. What that means, we don't understand, but it sounds like they're accepting the narrative of muktzah.
Okay. But the narrative of muktzah is referring to Ekzah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. What is the egg itself?
Nothing now, it's just shell.
But was the egg...
Benishmashes.
No, the egg was laid before Yom Tov.
Correct.
What is the status of the egg itself?
So I will argue the egg is not muktzah because you can use it to support a bowl.
Okay. So since the egg is not muktzah, then there was no muktzah inyan beforehand, and that way Rashi actually makes sense.
Except the chick was, but the chick is muktzah.
You don't need
Okay, but the egg could have been used for something. So he's saying, just in general, since it could be used for something, the hatching allowed the...
No, he hasn't said that.
But it's not the same as the cow, that if you shech the cow and you have the kid of the cow...
That's where the Gemara is going.
No, but
the Gemara is going to that question.
But if the egg is mutter, and the only thing that's holding you back, the only thing, therefore, that's holding you back is the fact that something was born out of the egg, wasn't around Bein HaShemashes, then what Rashi then is saying, then the Gemara can make sense without Rashi by saying, okay, now we look at it. It was not Moksa Benish Marshes. The egg, as we saw it. What the status of what was inside, we don't know. But the egg could have been used, so we could have been metal to it and supported a bed.
But what's inside is Moksa.
Well,
but if you
shecht it. So the sheep
didn't shecht it when it was inside the egg. Now that it's born, you can't shecht it, but you can't because it was Moksa all along.
But the egg is not muktzah because the egg.
The egg wasn't, but the chick inside is.
But the chick inside is subsumed in the egg.
If you shech,
I don't know what inside.
Who invented that idea?
If you shech the chicken.
Well, what? But how? Hold on. If something inside is muktzah, then I shouldn't be able to touch
it at all.
That's not so. Let's imagine the following scenario. I have a drawer.
Okay.
The drawer has a screwdriver in it that also has knife. The drawer is not muktzah. Right now, I'm looking at the egg as though it's a receptacle for storing the chick. But it also has its own function. It's not truly analogous to the drawer, but it's good enough for our purposes.
So what would you describe as being muktzah bein hashmashos? You don't have a living thing yet.
Well, why not? The chick is alive. Yeah. It's inside the egg. It's alive.
The drawer is not a good example because it's not a chilat.
Well, the drawer isn't a good example because what we're saying is the physical egg has a role.
Yeah, something. Right.
Physical, but I can come up with a case. If I had a ball.
We have a concept that something was contained in something earlier in the set, didn't we? That it was that the Gemara wanted to distinguish something.
Right. That was when we talked about juice coming out of a fruit and all that. But I don't see how that connects here.
The chicken.
Yeah.
And inside you found the egg.
No, but that's
we're getting to that. We're getting to
that. Different case.
That's the egg
existed outside of the chicken bein hashemashes. It was just an egg.
Correct. We're going to get to that case. We're not there yet.
Okay. But it's a biology question I'm asking here. Do you know an egg in advance whether it has a chick or whether it could be used for cooking? In other words, the egg before you...
Hypothetically, you can candle it.
Right, but if he didn't candle it, and he thought he had an egg that could be used for normal eating, and it had to have a chick inside... So it wasn't muksa because it was edible in their mind.
So Howie asks a really interesting muksa question in general, which I've researched before and I don't remember the answer to right now. But Howie's question is this. Muksa is fundamentally about your state of mind. Did you intend to use this or not? So what if you have an object which you think is not muksa? You intend to use it. Your thought process is incorrect. It actually was muktza, but you didn't know it. You thought it was fine. And then the muktza condition ends. So for example, I had a pillow. I thought my pillow was usable. I didn't realize that I had left my wallet on the pillow earlier in the day, and therefore my pillow was a busis. Shabbos starts. At some point, somebody knocks the wallet off of the pillow for whatever reason. The wallet falls off the pillow. Who cares? The wallet ends up off of the pillow. So now, the muktza condition from when Shabbos started is gone. Granted that it was muktza when Shabbos started, I didn't know that. I thought I was going to be able to use it. So I believe it remains muktza. I believe so. I looked it up ages ago by something else, but I think it remains muktza. But we have a different problem here, which is that Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan have accepted Rav's narrative. They've accepted the idea that Rav expresses that says that this chick would be muktza, except that when it was born, shechita, you know, the permission to shecht had somehow made it eligible. The problem is that the Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara and Shabbos, Daf Kuf Nun Vav Amud Beis, agree with Rabbi Shimon to minimize muktza. Rabbi Shimon doesn't believe in a broad application of muktza. He only applies muktza in very narrow cases. Cases like where you took your grapes and your figs and you put them out to dry on Friday, demonstrating you don't intend to use them because it's going to be days before they dry out. But otherwise, they don't apply the laws of muktza. So Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree with Rabbi Shimon, then why is this chick muktza at all? So Tosfos' answer, it's Tosfos Hoil on our page, I'm not going to go through it inside right now, but Tosfos' answer is that you're right, and here Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan are not speaking about their own point of view, they're speaking about Rabbi Yehuda's point of view. Rabbi Yehuda, against Rabbi Shimon, believes in muktza. So they're saying, we don't believe this personally, but if you were to believe in muktza, then this is why it would be mutter. That's the way that Tosfos resolves it. The Bnei Yoshua is going to give another answer. Mishnah Berurah gives another answer. Take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, source Aleph. He says, and this will go back to our bold question, I suppose. Ve'av hamatirin muktza b'yom tov, modin b'muktza kazeh, sha'ad sheyetze ha'efroach la'avir ha'olam, lo ha'yara'ui l'klum. He says, even those who are lenient with muktza on Yom Tov will agree that this egg is muktza. He's not going with supporting the bowl. Why? Because until the chick hatches, it's useless. Even a dog wouldn't eat the chick while it's still inside the shell. Dogs won't eat whole eggs, he says. I don't know. But he's not even accepting the support of the bowl. Maybe because this is an egg that has a chick inside, then therefore you don't use it to support a bowl, because it needs to incubate. Maybe that's why people don't do that. They'll use an egg that's, you know, that's not fertilized.
Not fertilized.
We have to go back to the people who did those videos and find out if there's a difference between the ability of an egg to support a truck if there is a chick inside it and if there is not a chick inside it.
What does the Mishnah Berurah say? It's okay to eat or not to eat?
So the Mishnah Berurah is saying the reason why it's muktza, even according to Rabbi Shimon, and therefore even according to Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, is because the egg has no function.
It's not allowed. It doesn't allow it.
So everybody will agree that it's muktza. So that's a simple way to solve Tosfos' question. Another approach comes from another Tosfos in Moran Shabbos. If you take a look at source Beis, he says, "De'izbe beitzas efroach, nira l'ri da'aser l'Rabbi Shimon." The Ri, one of the authors of the Tosfos, says even Rabbi Shimon would say muktza applies to this egg. Why? Mishum dekevan de'izbe efroach. Since it has a chick inside, we actually view this as like the grapes you left to become raisins, the figs you left to dry out, in the sense that there is an end stage that hasn't arrived, that isn't even within your control to accelerate. It's only going to happen when it happens, and you're waiting until then. So it's just like the drying grape. And therefore, even Rabbi Shimon will agree that it's muktzah. The reason I'm bringing this to you is not to confuse things. The reason I'm bringing this is actually to clarify things, believe it or not. The question that Tosfos asks about Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan is a very important question. He says, Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan seem to believe that this thing is muktzah. It shouldn't be muktzah, because they're lenient regarding muktzah. They don't apply muktzah across the board. So some of the answers, like we've seen in sources Aleph and Beis, the Mishnah Berurah's answer, the answer from Tosfos and Shabbos, is no, they will believe it's muktzah because this is a unique circumstance. It's like the grapes and the raisins, whatever you want to say. That's the view that they will take. However, the Pnei Yehoshua takes this question that Tosfos asked and offers a different solution, which is going to matter for our understanding of this case and understanding of what they meant when they said it permits itself for Shechita. Go back now to this Pnei Yehoshua, please. The middle of the third line. He says, Dibalav hachi kasha kushyas tosfos. He says, aside from my difficulty understanding what Rashi is trying to say, okay, he says, I don't get Rashi when he says that when it becomes shechtable, it stops being muktzah. Right? He says, aside from my problem understanding Rashi, I also have Tosfos' problem. Why would it be muktzah in the first place? Why does Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan need to say it permits itself for Shechita and therefore for muktzah? Typically, the less lo muktzah. They don't believe in muktzah. I added in brackets, Karebi Shimon. Ella, rather, he says, I'm going to give you a whole new way to look at Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. De'be'emes nirali de'lo kashya midi. It appears to me none of this is a problem. Dematzinon lememar da'af agav d'shmuel v'Rabbi Yochanan less lehu muktzah. Granted, Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan don't believe in muktzah. Afilu hachi asri ben nolad. They do believe in nolad, right? We went through a lot with nolad when we first began this masecha, and nolad is the idea that something that is born today is off limits because it was born today. It's not a law of muktzah. It's a separate category. The statement that he's making is, they may not believe in muktzah, but they certainly believe in nolad. Ve'ein lecha nolad gadol mizeh. There's nothing more nolad than a chick that comes out of an egg. That's the definition of nolad. So that's why it's usher. De'lo mikri nolad, ela bedavar shemei esmo lo havi ala shem ochel, ve'achshav nolad shem ochel. He says, what is nolad? Something which yesterday was not food, and now is food. That's my definition. But then he says, that's not going to apply to the chick. Why? Masha'in kein kan, as opposed to here. Da'af la'achar shenolad, lo havi alav shem ochel klal. Because even when it comes out of the egg, it's still not food. Why? Because you're not allowed to eat a live chicken.
But that isn't so.
El-alachar shechita, requires shechita, exactly. U-shechita hi de-materes le-efroach, ve-lo leida. He says, no transition took place at the moment that the egg hatched. The moment of the hatching of the egg is halachically insignificant. The chick was not edible inside the egg, and it's not edible outside the egg. Nothing happened. There was no transition as far as we're concerned. It was in a bowl, and then it was taken out of a bowl. That's the way we look at this. Shechita hidem ateres lefroach v'lo leida. What permits a chick for eating is shechita.
Then you shouldn't be able to take a cow on Yantiv and shaft it.
Well, wait,
because
were you,
the cow wasn't shafted before Yantiv.
Keep on reading.
Yeah, well,
the imkain, and if so, he says, lo mikri nolad. That's not called nolad. De mashalo haya niter kodem ze b'shechita. Lo mikri nolad, de ariyehu de ravia Allah. He says that's not called nolad. Why? Because when Yom Tov started, why couldn't I have shechted this egg at the moment Yom Tov started? Not the egg, I'm sorry, the chick.
It wasn't there.
Because it was there. Why couldn't I shecht this chick? It was inside the egg. So he says that's an external factor. Hypothetically, this chick has been shechtable since before Yom Tov. The only reason it wasn't shechtable was because there was this thing in the way. It was called a shell. You can't shecht a shell. That's what was preventing it. He says in his last phrase here, it's like there was a lion crouched nearby, and that's why I didn't shecht the animal. It's an external factor. There's been no transition in the nature of this chick. That's the Bnei Yoshua's point.
So in fact, it's not nolad at all.
It's, well, the reason why I would have said Aser would have been nolad, and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan are saying it's not nolad. There was no Leda.
The Bnei Yoshua and Rashi come to the same conclusion, just there's no Miko Kodik of Bnei Yoshua.
Well, Rashi seems to think that there was a Moksa status and that it ended when it became acceptable. What the Bnei Yoshua is doing is he's saying, forget Moksa, throw out Moksa. That's not what the Gemara meant.
The result is the same. You're allowed to shech it.
Correct.
And to eat it.
Yes. So, and that's Shmuel Merbiol. That's correct.
So the difficulty of Bnei Yeshua is you don't know how developed it was before Yom Kippur.
I was wondering the same thing. And the answer has to be, he has to assume, as Tosfos says, that it was complete. Even though you're right,
very hard
I don't
to
know
believe,
that.
Because you said it yourself. That when it comes right out of the egg, even then, you have to make sure it's usually wait a little bit.
You are
so
correct.
It must be a case that you don't have to wait all the time. Sometimes you can get born very mature.
Right. Well, that was already Tosfos. If you look, take a fast look at Tosfos at Froach, you'll see where he says it. You can yell at him. Ev Rosh Nolad Bayom Tov Vechule. He says, Nira Lomar, the Isrami Shanitachu Einav Hayom. He says, you'd have to say that the eye, it opened its eyes today, meaning the day it was hatched. The Ilonif Tachu Einav, because if its eyes didn't open, Kaimalanda Filu Bechol Aser. Then, having nothing to do with Shabbos or Yom Tov, will be Aser, because we don't know that it is viable yet.
Of course, they should have to have opened his eyes in the shell already.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a challenge with the Bnei Yoshua,
which you can never determine whether
it's
there or not.
But the idea itself, the core idea that he's expressing, is a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. In other words, what he is saying is, and it fits the words of Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. When Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan say it's because the chick permitted itself with shechita, what that means is the birth didn't mean anything, the hatching didn't mean anything. The moment when it becomes usable is shechita, and shechita hypothetically could have happened when it was in the egg. It's just that we're not, able to do that. Physically able to do that. Halachically? Sure, go ahead, cut through the shell, see what happens. 10 times out of 10, it's not going to be a kasher shechita.
But you don't really need to. Yeah, but that's a hypothetical. You don't really need to cut through. The question is if it's in existence and the only thing that prevented you from getting it was it not accessible, it means that you could have done the. Hypothetically, could have done the shechita. It was an item that was, just like it's eligible for shechita on yantid, it was eligible ben hashmoshes for shechita,
right.
Except that.
Shechita could have been done before Yom Tov. That's
yeah. Let's say a cow wanders into my premises. Ben Shmashes, I couldn't have done the shechita because it was away. It got lost, and then it wanders back in. That's not going to prevent me from not being. I don't have to have that cow designated,
right?
A particular cow, so I can do the shechita. So this is not much different. It's just not accessible.
So you could X-ray the egg.
Yeah.
And do laser
on Yom Tov.
No, you get it right before Yom Tov.
And you could. Mark on the egg exactly where you had to do the shechita.
You don't think the chick moves around at all?
Yeah, it does.
It'll move around in there. The marking is not going to.
Especially when you roll the bowl a little
but
bit.
But if you did that,
shake it.
Wouldn't it be kosher? Would it be in the veil?
So the problem I would have is that we, generally speaking, disqualify shechita that's done where you're not able to watch the blade go through the neck. They talk about that. Shechting inside the mother is a case that we'll have to get to. They talk about, with an animal. Or shechting at night.
What if you cracked the shell off? It hasn't been born yet. You took the shell off and then you shechted it.
So you could do that.
And it wouldn't be in the veil?
Why would it be?
I don't know. It's not alive.
Why isn't it alive? We talk about where it's viable. You're right. As we said before, it has to be viable. Yeah. But that's the Pnei Yoshua's explanation of our Gemara, and it gives us tremendous new insight, I think, into how Nolad works. Nolad means that it wasn't food before, and it is food now, and because of something intrinsic to the item, not because of some external factor that prevented it from being food before, and now it is food. That's the idea. So the... That doesn't end the fact that we have Machlokas Rav versus Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav is still insisting it's Moksa. Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan are saying no, it's not, because they don't believe in Moksa. And they don't believe that it's Nolad either. Nothing. That would be their argument. So the Gemara now challenges Rav. Rav was the one who said that it's us. And remember, Rav is the king. Meaning, Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan can talk until they turn blue. Halacha kerav bi'isuri. The law follows Rav as a general rule when you're dealing with prohibitions. So Rav is the one that we need to convince. So let's see what happens. Rav Omar, oh, sorry, we said that already. Amri le Rav Kahana Rav Asi le Rav, six lines up from the bottom. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi say to Rav, V'chima bein zeh le egel shano le biyomtov. Charlie's question. What's the difference between this egg, which you're telling me is mukta, and a calf that was born on Yom Tov, which you are apparently allowed to shecht? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, this wouldn't be a question. So why is it that you're allowed to shecht the calf that was born on Yom Tov? Again, also you would have to know that it was viable and so on. So Amar Lahu, to which he replied, Ho'il u'muchan agav imo b'shchita. The answer is that it is muchan, it was already ready, inside of the mother, with the shchita, meaning that if you shecht the mother, remember the law of ben pakua, right? You find this inside the mother, you shechted the mother properly, the kid is kasher. That's the idea. So the Gemara says, not so fast. Uma ben zele egel shenolad min hatrefa. What about if you had a calf that was born from a mother who was a trefa? Take a look at Rashi, hatrefa.
Isn't there a cloud that a
trefa
can't actually...
Take a look at Rashi. Hang on. Take a look at Rashi. Bina asur, im nimtza besocha. If a trefa has a kid that's found inside after the trefa dies, the kid is asur. Why?
It's a kid who's not alive yet.
No?
No, it was live young inside the mother.
So the
It was alive when you found it inside.
So you shechted the mother, you found it...
No, the mother's a trefa. I mean, let's say I shafted it, fine. I shafted the mother. Mother turned out to be a trefa, so we couldn't eat the mother. But the young inside would...
Is alive, though.
Is alive, yeah. Correct. So what he's telling me is the kid's usher anyway. Why? De uber yerech imohu. Because we have a principle, remember the Gemara in Erechin, that the young are considered to be a part of their mother. Ho'elu b'shchitas imo atabala ochlo. Since, when you shaft the mother, you're now coming to eat it. So that means that if this kid was born from the trefa on Yom Tov, right, not when you shechted the mother, but was born from the trefa on Yom Tov, you couldn't say it was ready for shechting inside the mother, because it wasn't, because shechting the mother wouldn't have permitted the young. And yet, b'shchitas imo muter l'shochto ul'ochlo, de'lo ashkechan man de'asir. And yet, we don't have any record of anybody prohibiting it. The rule, we assume, is in fact that this kid is going to be mutter for shchita. That's the assumption that we make. Now, in terms of the question of trefa yoledes or trefa ina yoledes, so I'll say we're going with the view that trefa yoledes would be the simplest approach to it. Yeah. I think there are other things you could say, but I don't think you need to. Yeah.
Isn't there a concept that you don't shecht? Am I getting this confused with something else? You don't shecht the mother and the child in the same day.
You're not. They're separate. They're separate entities.
No, but it's true that you don't shecht the mother and child.
You don't need the child as an issue.
No, but what are you asking?
How could that have been permitted in the first place?
When you
want to pass the Wednesday, it wasn't.
In which scenario were you? In which scenario? No, we entertain the idea that the mother died and then you. In the first case, you shecht the mother and you find the young inside. There's no shechita going on for the young.
Okay.
That's case number one. Case number two would be the mother was a trefa and the mother died and you found the young inside. And again, there was no shechita.
Then you need to shecht.
And then you need to shecht the young, correct. But we're saying it's not good because since the mother was a trefa, the young is a trefa anyway. And then a third possibility would be the case where the trefa actually gave birth, assuming a trefa can do that. But even still, I don't know if there would be a question, because I seem to recall the view of Rabbi Shimon is that when we say that you can't shecht the mother and its young on the same day, that assumes the first shechita was a kosher shechita, leading to something you could eat. They have a whole discussion about it. What if there's osav as vino, but you shechted kudshim in a way that was inappropriate? Like, there are a lot of discussions about this. I seem to recall Rabbi Shimon holds that it has to be a kosher shechita.
But also you're saying if the trefa gave birth, you're allowed to eat the kid. You can shecht it on Yom Tov.
No, you're not allowed to. Well, that's our problem. That's his objection. Where are you reading?
Well, that's the conclusion. But that's why this is
a question, exactly. In other words, according to Rav, right? Rav's statement was that this animal, that this bird inside the egg is mukta. And our question is, well, then why is the egel that was inside the trefa not mukta?
Right. So that's a challenge. Inside a trefa, we didn't have the answer.
So, right. So his answer is shasik rav. Rav was silent. Doesn't respond. So that's okay. Amar Rava v'itim Rav Yosef. Along comes Rava, or some say Rav Yosef, and he says, "My time was shasik Rav. Why was Rav quiet? He had an answer. Le'malahu ha'olu muchan agav imo leklavim. Why doesn't he say? Because it's true. You couldn't have shechted it and eaten it when it was inside the treifa. However, it could have been fed to the dogs. The mother was a treifa. What were you going to do with the treifa? The treifa died. You were going to throw it to the dogs." So it was muhan for pet food. Amar le Abaye, which Abaye replies, Hashta muhan when you understand. Hashta muhan adam lo abi muhan le klavim. He says no, because human food, that which is suitable for human beings, is not considered suitable for the dogs. Assuming you believe in muktza like Rabbi Yehuda does, not like Rabbi Shimon. Then that which is suitable for people to eat is not automatically ready for animals to eat. There we have a distinction here. Disnan, here's the Mishnah. We actually quoted this in the beginning of the Masechta. Mechatchin es hadluin lifnei behema ves hanevela lifnei haklavim. If you have gourds, the gourds are not connected to the ground. The gourds are separated from the ground already, and you want to cut them up for animals to eat. Or you have an avela, an animal that died without being shechted. You want to cut that up for the dogs. You're allowed to do so, says the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. The Tanakhama is following the view of Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't apply muktza broadly. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im lo haisa nevela me erev Shabbos asura levi she'ena menamuchan. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, if the animal was alive before Shabbos started, you can't do this because it was not yet ready for the dogs. So the point is, Rabbi Yehuda's position is that this animal before Yom Tov was human food. Before Yom Tov, before Shabbos. The Shabbos in this case. But the animal was human food before Shabbos started, not for animals. And therefore, it's not considered ready to be used for animals on Shabbos. What he's really telling me is that there's such a thing as partial muktza. Something can be muktza for one function and not muktza for another function. It was ready for use for this purpose before Shabbos. That's fine, then it's not muktza as far as that purpose is concerned. But don't use it for another purpose for which it in fact was not designated beforehand. That's the idea that he's entertaining. We see this happen in a lot of different ways in the laws of Shabbos. So for example, let's say I have a vase, right? So before Shabbos started, it was a fine vase. Maybe I don't want to get into vases. It was a decanter, right? I had a nice glass decanter, and before Shabbos it was a glass decanter, and it would have been used for pouring things at the table. On Shabbos, it falls and it smashes. There's a pretty piece that comes out of this without sharp edges, so it's safe for me to touch and to handle. And I can use it for, I don't know, a fill in the blank, some use that's not a decanter's use.
It's a napkin holder, the loop that's in the...
Okay, the loop from the handle, right, is now a napkin holder. But that wasn't what it was meant for when Shabbos started. It's a different function. So what we're suggesting here is that that which is ready for one use, but not for a different use, is mukta as far as the different use. But, and here's a very key point, the reason why this is true is not simply that it was not designated for use for animals, but that's anti its prepared status. Its prepared status was as human food. If someone would have come to you and said, hey, let's feed this to the animals, you would have said, no, I don't give this to the animals. You, Dafka, wouldn't want it to be used for that purpose. It's stronger than just, it isn't designated for that normally. Right? This isn't the hammer, which is normally for nails, and someone comes along and says, use it to smash a walnut. We're talking about something you wouldn't normally want, because by using it for the dogs, you've taken it out of the realm of being for human beings. No one's going to be able to eat it now.
Is he saying something that strict? Because then that would also apply to the gourds. In other words, he's saying when something has actually changed its status, that something that was permissible for man,
yeah,
and now it's restricted because
yeah,
now it's in the vela.
Yep.
But I don't see the that higher level. Because
Rabbi Yehuda will indeed disagree regarding the gourds also.
Oh, so he just...
Yeah, he mentioned the Nevela, but he's going to mention... He will include the gourds too.
Okay.
So
then
yeah,
because it's... If you look at it, the value is much higher for its normal intended purpose.
Right.
To feed to humans. If you're feeding it to the club, and it's devalued.
It doesn't matter that it's Shabbos and not Yom Tov, but...
No.
The Gemara book, there is no difference.
Well, there are differences.
Because we're talking about food.
Correct.
So on Yom Tov, it should not be applied, no?
It
is a Shabbos case, but what one...
And my question is it different on Yom Tov or it doesn't matter?
Why would it be different? I'm missing what the difference
because it's food related.
It's not a matter of that. When the day started, this was for human beings, and now you're trying to use it for animals.
So this would apply?
I believe so.
The same.
I think so. The point for our purposes is and this is the key point. This Mishnah said that if it's designated for human beings, then it's not for animals. Okay? Remember what we were talking about. We were talking about the egg, right? All of this started with the egg. And you made a statement, right? You said, why doesn't Rav say... Why didn't Rav tell them the reason why it is usur? I'm sorry, the reason why it's why the animal that was inside the trefa, the young that was inside the trefa, is allowed, is because it was muchan for dogs. So therefore, now this can be used for human beings when it emerges from the mother. Again, but you have to keep track of multiple pieces here. The Rav had said the chick is Moksa, right? We challenged Rav and said chick being inside egg is like calf being inside trefa. And in the case of the calf being inside the trefa, we say that the calf may be used.
Right.
So therefore, the chick that was inside the egg should be used. To which the Gemara's answer, and to which Rav doesn't have an answer. But Rav and Rabbi Yosef say, but you could have answered. You could have said the two cases are not analogous. Because in the case of a calf inside a trefa, it was ready for use. It was ready as dog food. Because the animal, because its mother was a trefa. That's what was going to happen. It was going to be thrown to the dogs. So Abaye says that wouldn't have worked. The reason why it wouldn't have worked is because if you tell me that which is meant for people is not also ready for dogs. So I'm going to tell you in reverse also that which is ready for dogs is not for human beings. That's his. He says, if you're going to say that, then five lines down on Vavim Beis, Muchon LeKlavim, Havi Muchon LeAdam, are you going to say that which is for the dogs is still okay for human beings? To which they say no. They say, that was an incorrect extension. Amar Lei In. He said, yeah. Muchon LeAdam, Lo Havi Muchon LeKlavim. That which is ready for people is not ready for animals. Why? Because that which is suitable for people to eat, they don't throw to the dogs to eat. There's an interesting Gemara in Tanya stuff, Bezim and Bez about this. But that stuff Yomi tomorrow. Yeah. So look at the discussion there. But he says, that which is suitable for people is not going to be used for the dogs. However, muchan leklavim, havi muchan leadam, that which is suitable for animals, if that doesn't gross you out, and you look at it and say, you know, I could eat that, then you eat it. D'daite d'inish akol midi d'chazile. Because people have in mind anything that is suitable for them. So therefore, right, now we have to roll this back up. Therefore, Abaye bringing that Mishnah about the gourds and the nevela for the is irrelevant, and therefore the argument they wanted to make on behalf of Rav is correct. That's the upshot. the argument that they wanted to make on behalf of Rav, to say that it is mukta, that the egel is not mukta because the treifa was suitable as pet food, as opposed to the egg case where it was suitable for nothing, that's actually a reasonable argument to make. That's the upshot of all of this. I have to table this for next time, like make a table so you'll be able to see it. Sorry?
Why did Rav cannot say it?
I'm sorry. So why didn't Rav say it?
Yeah.
Is a really good question. So what I wanted to do next is ask the question of what was Rav thinking?
Right.
That's exactly the question that we now need to address. Rav didn't offer this. Does that mean that Rav agreed with the other side? Or does Rav, in fact, say, no, I disagree, I just didn't bother to have a conversation about it? How do I take Rav? If you take a look, I didn't bring it here, the Rosh says that Rav may be read as agreeing with them or not. You could take Rav either way. It's possible to read Rav as being silent because he gave in, but it's also possible that it's not so. Take a look at this Gemara in Bava Basra that I brought you on your sheet, source Dalet. They're dealing with a case of a sale. And what happens in this discussion is there's a seller and there's a buyer. And the seller marks off the space that he says he's selling to the buyer. Matzar lo, I added in the brackets. Matzar lo hamocher, meitzar echad aroch, umeitzar echad katzar. Okay, b'shtar mechiras karka. What happened was, he wrote up the deed for what he's selling. Right? He wrote up a document saying, this is what I'm selling. And he marked off one long border and one short border. So what he did was create a shape that, I don't remember what we called this in geometry 18 years ago, a rhombus or a trapezoid or something like that. But the point is that it's a rectangle, except that it's not. Right? In other words, imagine that where Alan is sitting here is one side, that's the short side. Okay? And then the sail goes up both sides of the table, where Shaya is, right, and where I am. But the line that was drawn on that side, on Shaya and Howie's side of the table, goes all the way to the end. The line on this side only goes up to where I'm sitting. Okay, Gerard, I hope you're following that. So the question now is, what did the buyer get? That's the question above Abasra. Because the two sides are uneven. So, Amar Rav, lo kana ela keneged hakatzar. Rav says, the line stops where I am sitting at the table. It goes straight across. Even though the line that was drawn on Shai and Howie's side is longer, this is all we know about, for sure, is up to here. That's Rav's position. We're not going to debate Bava Basra right now, because that'll take us much farther afield. I just want to show you what happens here with Rav. Amru le Rav Kahana Rav Asi le Rav. Along come Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, and just like in our Gemara, they challenge Rav. And they say, V'yikne keneged Rosh Tor. Why don't you acquire it on an angle? Take the part where I am, right, where the line ends on my side, the part where it ends by Howie, right, and just make it a diagonal line. And that's the way that the purchase works. Shasik Rav. Gemara says Rav was silent. Umode Rav, and Rav agrees in the following case. Hecha de'ika meitzer Reuven b'Shimon mechad gisa, umeitzer Levi b'Yehuda mechad gisa. I'll give you another case where there are multiple people surrounding the different sides of the field, and therefore you marked off more here and less there. And the point isn't the point is only that he then begins to discuss a separate case, and he says, I agree on the separate case. So the question is, when he was silent on the first case, did he agree or not agree? So the Rashbam says in source Hey, Umo de Rav mekame de ishtik. See, Rashbam is bothered. You said Rav was silent, and he agreed in this other case. It sounds like you're telling me he was silent and he didn't agree on the silent one. So the Rashbam says no. He says Rav had agreed even before this discussion when he was silent about this other point. He had agreed about the second case. Avobaser the ishtik odi bitravayu. But once he was silent, then he actually admitted on both. In other words, shtika kehodah. When Rav is silent, that means that Rav gives in. So in our Gemara, applying what happened to Bava Basra in our Gemara, Rav is silent in the face of Rav Kahana and Rav Asi. That means that he agrees with them. not everybody agrees with Rashbam's read of what's going on. The
that he does not agree with that.
No, he means that when Rav is silent, he does. He agrees.
He concedes.
Right. He gives in. You follow?
Meaning he doesn't have a response to the challenge. Therefore, he agrees with the challenge. The challenge.
I think I saw it differently.
Yeah, but that's what he's saying. That's what Rashbam is saying. That once he's silent, that means he indeed does agree.
I would say more so here.
No, he was silent before. So he would change his opinion about the egg. He was silent.
Changes opinion about the egg.
Right,
right.
No, that's true.
Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, that's true. However, Tosus is going to disagree. Tosus reads it differently. If you take a look at Tosus in Source Vav, Umode Rav, Rav agrees, Pirish Bukundrus, Kodem Sheshasak. He's quoting Rashbam. He says, Rashbam said, Rav agreed on the second case before he was quiet about the first one. Mashma de Beshasak Modelahu. And the indication is that he's actually now agreeing on both of them. That's Rashbam's read, as Tosus quotes it. Avagav de Lekaman, Shasak La Abaye, Avagav de Lo Hodalo. He says, even though you're going to see another Gemara in Bava Basra, in which he's going to be silent in the face of Abaye, someone's going to be silent in face of Abaye, it's not Rava, when they're parentheses, it means that's a mistake in the Nusach. But he says, even though on the next page there's going to be silence in a debate with Abaye, and it's not going to indicate agreement, it's simply that someone didn't bother to respond, here you won't say that. Why? Because Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are so great that they are like students who become colleagues to Rav. And if Rav didn't answer, it's because he lost, not because he didn't think that they were worthy of a response. It's not because he didn't want to bother responding. Rather, it's because, indeed, he was modest. So he actually does end up saying the same thing as Rashbam in that discussion there. He says, when Rav is silent to Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, it means he's giving in. It means that he has no response. Even though our Gemara ultimately came up with a response, he doesn't have a response. Now, I want to go a little bit further with this. God willing, next time to talk more about this silence thing and how it affects the halacha in our Gemara about the chick laid on that's hatched on Yom Tov.
Halacha is Garav, so we have to understand what he meant.
We'll have to see.
But there's a difference between these two cases, leaving Rav Kahana aside for a moment. There, what you see from the Gemara, it seems like a svara only. One had a svara the short side, one had a svara the long side. And it's a sword. Okay, so the long side is too much, short side is the minimum, so you do it on an angle, so you'll get the hapshara between the two.
Well, that's one way to put it.
But there's no direct contradiction of one person's svara. In other words, here, we were bringing something to actually refute Rav completely, because we're bringing other cases in Shas. In the case of Bava Basra, it just seems to be a competing svaras.
Yes.
And so I would say here, it's more problematic that he's quiet, maybe, because Gemara actually seems to be knocking away his Sparta, because we have a conflicting.
So it's a greater reason to say he's conceding here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Greater reason to say he's conceding in the earlier one.
Because in the earlier one, that's
wrong. Here, it just, this is my opinion, this is like, should,
wait,
this
yeah,
my
wait, opinion,
no, 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 you're confusing the two again. You mean in Bava Basra?
It's because of using the word here.
Yeah, use the here and there, right?
Yeah, no, I think we're all on the same page. Bava Basra is logic versus logic.
Yeah.
Beitza is case versus case. Right.
Just a question. Is the Rashbam saying just specifically about Rav that when he's Shatik that he's Modeh? And is the Tosfot basically saying that anytime anybody says that they're silent, they are modeh?
Opposite. Rashbam leaves open the possibility, he doesn't really say, but he leaves open the possibility that every time it says someone is silent, that means that he concedes. From Rashbam, I could take that. Tosfot says no. He says, there are cases where one is silent and it is not concession, like in fact on the next page in Bava Basra, Tosfot says, However, if someone is silent to somebody who is worthy of a response, like Rav Kahana and Rav Asi to Rav, then that's a concession. Because if he had something to say, he would have said it. That's the way Tosfos reads it.
So he identifies as equals as being Rav Kahana
and Rav Asi.
And Rav Asi. In our case, it's Rav Asi too, isn't it?
Yeah, Rav Kahana, Rav Asi, and our Gemara also. So that's why this
is Rav Kahana and or just Rav Asi?
Yes, both.
Right, our Gemara too.
So that's what we're going to have to see. How does that play out? Good.